and Accountability and Information Technology for Thursday, the March 1st, 2007, together. And this is going to be an informational session, and we're going to hear about e-court. And if you would come forward and enlighten us. And I'm going to apologize in advance. I have to sneak out in a little while and go testify on another bill. And but so when that happens, you'll know it's not because I'm bored with your testimony.
Okay, Chair Riley, I promise not to take it personally.
Okay.
Chair Riley, for the record, I'm Sarah Gates of the Oregon Judicial Department, and with me I have Lance Harris, our interim CIO, and we've been asked to come here to talk to you about eCourt, which is the Oregon Judicial Department's strategic technology projects that we are undertaking. I want to take just a minute to recap why we're doing this, but the majority of what we're going to talk about are some specific issues that the Chair has asked us to go into. In front of you, you have a handout that will walk you through our presentation. And as you know, we've long recognized that our existing legacy systems don't meet the needs of our business, ours nor that of our partners. And so a comprehensive strategic planning effort 2 years ago created a 10 to 12 year plan for replacing the case and financial management systems and integrating electronic content management, electronic filing of documents into the court, and an internet-based presence for us. The new Chief Justice, Chief Justice Paul DeMunis, came to the Technology Committee last June and said, we want to accelerate that strategic plan and go forward in 5 years to replace these systems and bring us into a modern environment. This is in line with his three goals administratively, which are to be prudent managers of the public resources entrusted with us, promoting access to justice, and producing timely and quality work. I want to just talk for 1 minute about some of the business reasons. From the judicial decision-making perspective, improved technology will let us make better evidence-based decisions for sentencing offenders, making the best use of the criminal resources and the best effort to prevent the future criminal conduct. From the administrative perspective, we can't spend our precious resources on having people push paper around and enter data into the systems. We can't afford to lose our records when our courthouses are unavailable. We no longer have the space to store the records and to put our staff, and we need data to manage our programs. So what we've looked at is how do we do this through technology, how do we move forward, and give us the information we need to run our system better. And with that, I'm going to let Lance talk to you about some specific areas that the Chair has asked us to address.
For the record, my name is Lance Harris. I'm the interim CIO, Chief Information Officer for Oregon Judicial Department. One of the things that we're really wanting to do with this very significant project for our division is to ensure that we are following some very basic standards in the industry for how we run projects and how we put this product in. We obviously want it to be successful. You want us to be successful. The things that we're doing to make this work are to follow very established standards in the organization of project management. We're doing that with technologies called, and you have them in front of you, they're acronyms, but they're project management's best practices. It's called PMBOK. Other people have probably talked to you about those. We're also doing using best practices and standards for how we run our day-to-day operations. You'll hear terms about that. It's called ITIL, I-T-I-L. It stands for a bunch of words that are tough to always understand and put together, but it really is a basic premise for how we do our general work. Down that list, you'll see a couple other items. I'll skip them and get to some of the real important ones, and those are that we have an external auditor watching all of the project all along the way. And this person's going to be reporting not to the CIO, the Chief Information Officer, but instead to the Chief Justice and to the State Court Administrator, making sure that there's an independent auditor looking at the progress and reporting how this is going. That way, those people will know immediately or be able to report to the upper management if things are going wrong with the project. There'll be a constant reporting sequence that will go on there. The CIO will be certainly engaged and involved, but they will not be getting the day-to-day reports. They will not have that access until after the other people do. So we have a good check and balance on how the project's going, an independent review. Additionally, we've been very blessed by having a Chief Justice prior to Paul DeMunis, who was able to put into place a governance body for information technology. This body is essentially a board of directors. And this body watches every project that comes across the organization and gets put into place. They're watching, asking questions, making sure that all projects are proceeding properly, and they're comprised of judges and the trial court administrators and the division heads within the organization. This puts a customer in charge of what's going on in the information technology area rather than information technologists. The CIO is an ex officio, as is the state court administrator. So they're in the hot seat, but they're not the ones that are guiding and directing and voting on projects. So it's a very good model for ensuring that what we do is going to be done well. The things that we're going to be doing is making sure that this project is going to be successful, and it's going to be replacing the existing systems that we have. We're going to be doing this in 5 to 7 years, and it's a very significant undertaking, and it should not be taken lightly. This is a very important project. It's improving our information sharing upstream and downstream with all the other justice partners. So all the other people in the organization, the state organizations that share information, are going to be touching us or touching other the LEDS group and getting their information. We're the two pivotal groups. So we have to make sure that the information we receive and the information we share is going to be accurate and what they want it to be. Where we are in this process right now is that we're in the planning phase. We're not in a position to be picking things out. We're right now looking at things. We're trying to figure out what it is that we're doing, why we're doing it, and as Sarah has identified, we've established some of the business reasons why we're going after this. There are clear-cut reasons why we need to do this. It is not a technology architecture thing to do. It's not a gimmicky thing that we want to proceed with. There are driving, compelling reasons why we want to do that. The existing systems are very stable. They were made in COBOL. They're running on a very stable machine platform, and they're never breaking. We have the father and the mother, essentially, of those products working for us right now. And that, so those systems are functional. We're able to do today's work well, but we cannot do tomorrow's work. We're hamstrung by the fact that we're unable to have flexibility in those systems like we'd like it to be. So that's why we need to proceed, so that we can answer tomorrow's requirements of the public. We are gathering requirements for what those systems ought to be. We're looking at what the courts are doing, why they're doing it. We're mapping out their existing processes so that we're able to understand what the business drivers are for each of the steps that we're doing. Once we map those out, we'll contrast those with the vendor's products so that we'll know what it is that we have to change in our business practices to be able to implement successfully. We're preparing an implementation plan. That plan is going to drive us and tell what products go first, what products go second, what events happen after that, and are dependent upon that. That's the things that we're accomplishing right now. Additionally, we're in the process of staffing. That's probably the most critical area that we're going to face in respect to this project. What's it going to take to be able to do that? We've addressed the project office manager position, which was a pivotal role, and we've hired someone from Department of Human Services, Cheryl Morrison. She came over in October and November and started that group, setting standards for project office management, those kinds of things. In addition, the state court administrator has just recently hired a full-time CIO, a permanent CIO, Bud Borgia, who will be running the program at ITD, and he'll be starting in about 10 days. Two very critical positions, and Bud comes highly recommended from the county of Milwaukee in Wisconsin. And we've met with him, he's worked with us, and I'm very impressed with his skill sets and his capabilities. Additionally, we're training new staff in the new we're training staff in new technologies. Clearly, as we move forward, we're going to be using tools, techniques, products that are not of the old 20-year-old products. We have to move existing staff to be able to support that. We've already been very successful at moving two or three of our staff into web-based products and management, to database support, and those kinds of things. We'll be doing more of that as we proceed with our existing staff, making sure we protect them as much as possible. Critical to all of this is creation of a communications plan and being able to maintain that. Where are we? We've got to be able to talk to you. We've got to be able to talk to our constituencies. We've got to be able to talk to our internal staff. Where are we going? What are we doing this for? What are the business drivers? How are we doing in meeting those goals? Those are the things that we're looking at, making sure that we're accomplishing and that we're telling people on a repetitive basis. Now, as I indicated earlier, there's going to be a huge change in the way that we're doing our work. Implementing these critical foundational components means that we're going to change the way staff in the courts are going to do their job. We're going to have to be paying very careful attention to organizational change management. How much can they absorb? How much can they do? How do we do training? How much can they tolerate these kinds of changes? And we'll have to pay attention to what they're going through and making sure that they are being fed properly so that we're able to get them to do their job and continue serving the public. A very critical piece that we'll have to watch for. And finally, we're going to have to make sure that the other justice agencies are going to be able to interface with us. We have to know what their requirements are. We're going to have to know what their demands are going to be. And we're going to have to be able to follow them down their paths of changes and changing needs that they might have. So that's the current status of where we are. Our architecture, as I alluded earlier, we'd had some inquiries about that. It's too early for us to be picking the hardware of these systems. So we're looking at what the products are going to be first, seeing what those systems are available in the marketplace, and then we'll pick the environment from which they'll run. We are making sure that we're buying products off the shelf so that it's not custom built, so that we're able to support it more easily, and we will be using industry standards. That does not mean that it's going to be an open source, and you shouldn't confuse those two terms. Open source is totally different than a standards-based product. So we are going to be following a standard-based product off the shelf. We'll customize it to fit our business needs. And those are the primary positions. That's where we are today and where we're going. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about this project.
Representative Rod.
Thank you, Vice Chair Edwards. I know it's too early to tell what kind of products you're going to have, and not probably being too sage as far as computers go, but there's a lot out there about viruses and worms and the scary things that some people try to do to government. What can you give me some oversight as to what would be the protection to protect the system, especially if it's interwoven with other government systems for worms and viruses?
Vice Chair Edwards, Representative Girard, the issue of worms and viruses and other kind of malware that might be out there is a product of safety that's established way in a different layer, if you will, of this cake of products that we have. The applications that we're going to be installing are at the lower level of this layered cake, if you think about it. The security components that address things like malware are at a different layer in that cake, and they're at an upper layer. So they're stopping things from coming in and getting to that bottom layer. And that's the component that component is run by totally different applications and protection pieces. Those things are firewalls, they're antivirus products, they're intrusion detection systems, and those kinds of products make sure that we see what's happening and we guard against anything coming in or prevent it, and then we try and follow it if it does break in. And those are at a different level, but those are we have policies in place mandated by the state court administrator that we have antivirus on our desktops, we have antivirus and spam protection on our mail systems, and we regularly, once a week at least, and I don't know exactly, but we go through and scan all of our files to make sure that we have no viruses in them. Protection against intrusion detection or anybody trying to break in is done typically through a firewall, and there are rules established to prohibit that activity. Or to make it more difficult, it's never totally prohibited because we typically have defenders who are honest, good people and who are not thinking the way an intruder might. So we're also going to be pursuing an independent agency that will come in and do security analysis of our systems on an annual basis so that they're looking for holes in the systems to make sure that we have not left something open unintentionally and make sure that they're all covered. Did that answer your question, sir?
Well, as best as I think you probably could have.
All right.
Lance, could you talk a little bit about the value that this project is going to convey to the taxpayer or to, you know, what are the outcomes that you hope to achieve? I'm not an attorney myself. I'm not a judge. So I'm not exactly sure what we're trying to accomplish. You talked about you can do what you need to do now, but you're not really geared up for the future. So what are those needs and what do you hope to deliver?
Great question, Representative Edwards and Chairman. The issues that the Chief Justice has identified, making sure that we have access provided to the public on a 24-hour-a-day basis, is something that we cannot do today. We need to make sure that we're able to grant that so that you can pay your parking ticket at home, you can file your fees, you can file your documents for a particular case, you're able to take care of your legal papers that you want to be submitting to the court. You can see the status of your case. All of those things require a totally different product to be able to deliver it to the public. We have to be able to do that, and we don't have that capacity right now. Did that help you?
It did. And so as a follow-up, would it be fair to say that this will potentially reduce court costs, attorneys' fees for folks, general legal, the cost of litigation, whatnot?
Vice Chair Edwards, if I might take that question. What we're looking at is making our system more efficient, not just in the Judicial Department, but across the criminal justice system. So in terms of will it be savings to taxpayers, the inefficiencies that exist because of all the manual data entry across all the partner agencies, whether it's Department of Corrections, the Youth Authority, Human Services, or us, down to the sheriffs and the district attorneys, are phenomenal. We know that there will be efficiencies gained. I can't say that we're going to need less staff. I don't think that's true at all. What I do know is that we will be able to take the staff that we have and use those positions in a much more value-added way to the people of the state. And we will make so that you're not having people entering just data entry, managing files. They'll be helping the individuals who are doing pro se litigation, you know, filing their divorces and helping them through the system. Where also you'll see savings is for the attorneys. When they can electronically file something, they don't have to pay a courier. They don't have to go down to the courthouse to get copies and pay 25 cents a page and then do it again when it gets lost or something like that. There'll be time savings to everyone in the system, lawyers included. So, yes, there would be, your lawyer wouldn't necessarily have to show up in court as often because things will be flowing smoothly. The judge will have all the papers they need and things will be better coordinated. So ultimately, the system will run much more efficiently, but we need to invest in order to get there.
Looks like you have a question.
I think I have a question. My head's been on overload the last couple of days, so I'm trying to make sense out of this system. And this system is a statewide system. I mean, is it meant to provide for even, say, at the municipal court level, or I mean, who all is participating?
Chair Edwards, Representative Beyer, this is for the state court system, so those are the trial courts. This system will connect all of the trial courts in all the counties. the municipal and justice courts are not part of the unified state court system. However, there is a special courts advisory committee on which I sit, and we are looking, and I chair the technology subcommittee of that, and we are looking at how do we determine what data needs to flow between the municipal and justice courts and the state courts or the Department of Motor Vehicles or any other partner agencies, because this is all intermixed. And what standards can we put in place so that if they need data from us, we can get it to them, and if we need data from them, we can get it the most efficiently. One of the biggest low-hanging fruit in that area is for the Department of Motor Vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so they're playing very actively in that whole role. But this project will not provide a system for those justice and municipal courts. It is just for the trial court level. And there will be some benefits to the appellate court level because we're going to make sure that they have a separate case management, but we want them to be part of the content management, the keeping track of the documents and the video files and the exhibits. Because cases go from the trial courts to the Court of Appeals, and wouldn't it be great to transfer that file electronically rather than to have to make copies and copies and copies and carry it over?
Follow up?
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously the system is supposedly being built to help the public access the attorneys and everything. Is there as much benefit then, you think, to the municipal courts as there would be to the public and everybody else in accessing information, or
Chair Edwards, Representative Beyer, it depends on what the municipal and justice courts need in terms of data from us. If they need to find out about something that's going on in our system, then they would absolutely be able to go through a central place and get information about any cases that a person has had or that sort of thing. But in terms of the general public, I think the value is going to be really high in that you can go to one place to deal with any court in the state, use one form for getting, for filing a certain type of case or for getting a certain piece of information. You no longer are going to have to go find the one that fits that court and learn their process and then manually pay the fee and hope either by mail or in person. It's going to be much more of a iTunes, Amazon.com type of ability to do business at your own pace. You still can walk into the courthouse. We are not going to get rid of that functionality, but the real benefits here are for the lawyers and the public and any of our partners, including the Justice and Muni, but I don't see we don't have too many direct overlaps. We're trying to identify those more explicitly right now, though.
Thank you.
Question?
Yes, Representative Edwards.
A follow-up on that. I know at the state data center, we've had some discussions in another committee about some frustrations about to what extent counties mm-hmm. and other municipalities are marrying up with the state data center, what those opportunities are. And so I guess in light of those discussions, is the word out to the municipal courts, or are some municipalities pursuing their own projects in their silo and in their bubble, and do we have potential problems down the road having those systems communicate? And
Chair Riley, Vice Chair Edwards, right now we're just taking a survey out to all the Justice and Municipal Court judges. They have a conference, in fact, next week, and we are surveying them to find out exactly what they're doing in this area. We don't have a unified set of data, but this Special Courts Advisory Committee is looking at that specifically. And the way we're building our systems, we want to be able to send and receive data with a variety of platforms so that we are building it to standards so that that should not be a problem. But we don't have enough information that's as much information as I have at this time.
Yes, Representative
Barr. Well, someone reminded me of something over here, and I realize we're not a Ways and Means Committee, but what is the phase-in of funding that you guys are looking at?
Chair Riley, Representative Beyer, that's the question near and dear to my heart, since I'm the budget queen for OJD. We have a budget package in for 07-09 included in the Chief Justice recommended budget. We are looking for certificates of participation. We're approximately $40 million. We're, like Lance has said, we're still finalizing all the planning, and with that, we have mild adjustments to the cost, but $40 million plus or minus a little bit is where we're at. We're anticipating about the same amount of cost next biennia, and then it'll drop off after that. The way we're planning to pay the debt service back is a combination. We are looking at an other funds approach. When we do the electronic content management, we will be looking at a model similar to the federal government, where you pay to access documents when you get a free first look, and then when you want a copy, you pay on a per-page basis. We currently charge 25 cents a page for photocopies. It's something that already exists. We're also looking at e-filing. That's something the bar is strongly supportive of. A bill just passed through that would allow that to be used in our courts. So we're hoping to generate enough other funds revenue from those two sources, as well as other existing other funds revenue sources, where we have online access to our existing case management. And for the financial area, we have a collections account that we get to fund all those collections related activities. So that's how we plan to pay back the debt service that we need to build the system.
So what type of a revenue stream do you have on those now?
Chair Riley, Representative Beyer. Currently, we get several million dollars of biennia for OGIN Online. It's around $2 to $3 million, which is the online access, where if you need to look at OGIN for some reason, you pay to do that. Our collections account is funded by, it depends on how much money we are collecting. We get a percentage of all that is collected that goes to fund those. And I don't have the exact number in front of me, but I can get that for you if you're interested. The estimates for electronic content management are around $4 million a biennia. Mm-hmm. And we've done models based on the federal approach. And so that's our estimate of what we'd be getting there. And then as volume increases, obviously, the revenue would increase as well. And over the long term, what we're looking at is using those funds to ongoing enhancements to our technology, sort of a self-funding model, but we need the sort of one-time lump investment. Does that answer your questions? And I'll get back to you on the collections account.
Thank you.
Excuse me for stepping out and missing some of your testimony and some of your answers to questions. I have a couple of questions that may have already been answered. I know that you're in early planning stages, and you may not know answers to some of these questions, and that's fine. I can wait and get them when you know. But is there any consideration being given now to being part of the scenic project? Are you going to be moving into the state data center?
You want to handle it?
I'll be happy to. Chair Riley, at this time, we have investigated with them as to whether or not it would make sense for us to be housed in their facility, and they don't have a model that supports our needs. And our needs are somewhat unique in that we're a separate branch, and our systems would need to have a spacing from somebody else in terms of both a literal and a logical spacing so that they don't have access to our data. However, we have undertaken to make sure that we're using other facilities where we can join up with other data centers and use an environment where there's a very solid, secure physical presence as well as redundant power and other environmentals. And we'll be joining the Anderson Readiness Center, where the National Guard has their headquarters and where the LEDS group is already housed, and some of ODOT is also there. So we're taking advantage of other existing data centers, but not the scenic facility. That way we're able to retain our physical separations that's required and be able to also have some efficiencies and not build our own data center.
Great. And the other question is about the I know you have a current system, so you have this problem already, but security.
Right. Representative Gerard already asked that question, and Chair Riley, what we're trying to do with this is make sure that we have established a solid piece of security layer around us, not only in terms of applications and firewalls, which we have in place, and policies to ensure that they are in place, But we also are having an annual security audit performed by an outside firm, which has been already established through DAS. And we're going to be using that firm to ensure that we have all of our holes plugged appropriately, all the ports are appropriately plugged and secure, and that we have the best resilience against intrusion detection or intrusion possible. The other components that we'll have to add will be an intrusion detection system. That is to be able to see if we've been penetrated and where they've gone. That's a component that we'll be adding as we enhance our exterior-facing environments. We're also looking at where these systems should reside. Do we keep them with our existing products? How much separation should they have? Should we outsource those products and those physical systems? How do we do the best separation to ensure uptime capability and the inability to be penetrated? And those are balances that we'll have to be weighing in the future. Probably in the next year or so, we'll be asking those questions and making specific decisions on those products.
Okay. And do you have the ability to talk with DAS to their security? They have a really good person on their security for Scenic and other projects. And
yes. Chair Riley, in fact, we are participating in the security risk assessment that Teresa Messier's shop is doing, where we have volunteered because we're so eager for that. And so I used to work with her, and so we've kept in very close touch, and we're using them to the extent possible.
Great. And do you have any idea, switch subjects again, do you have any idea at what point you will be looking at potential staffing levels and where you're going to be? Do you know? I know you don't know this now. I want to know if you know at what point or when you will be at that point.
Chair Riley, we're going to be looking at staffing issues significantly in the next 6 months. That's where we're really going to start ramping up with our systems. We're going to be performing our requirements analysis in the next few months. We're going to be using our subject matter experts that are residing both in the courts and on the IT staff now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be creating those requirements. We're going to be then looking at vendors that can meet those requirements. And then once we start ramping up for installation, we'll have to start bringing in specialized skill sets to support and to run those systems. And we'll be doing training to make sure that our existing staff is able to transition to new jobs however we can, in whatever way we can. That's a critical component. We want to make sure that we advance the skill sets of our existing staff as much as possible.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you very much. It's helpful, and we're going to be expecting more reports back from you in the future. One more thing. You mentioned an outside audit, which reports back to the Chief Justice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is that how often is that report back going to be happening?
Chair Riley, an independent quality assurance person, typically on a project of this size, should be reporting back no less frequently than monthly, so that they have a very good understanding of where the project is and have a early warning system established, so that if projects are slipping or if these independent auditors see any sign that we're not communicating properly, that we're not addressing specific issues, that we have too many open items, immediately bring it to the attention of the leadership of the organization so that they can take appropriate action.
Okay. And is there a chance that this committee will be privy to those updates?
Chair Riley, I'm sure we'd be open to having that discussion. We would be happy to report to any legislative committee that would like to talk to us at any time.
Okay, well, if you could, if you could find out if we could get copies of those reports at least to the chair of the committee, and then the administrator would possibly share those. But
great.
Certainly the chair of the committee would like those.
Right. And Chair Riley, we have not hired that position yet because we're still in the planning phase. But once we do get that on board, I'll talk to the chief and see what he has to say and let you know.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you for your questions.
And with that, that's all we have on the agenda today. I'm going to close the committee for today, and we will be meeting again on Tuesday.